Hello and welcome to the Breast Cancer Now podcast. This is a series that shares the stories of women and men who have had breast cancer. It's also where you'll hear the voices of our nurses, researchers and experts who help to provide support for today and hope for the future to anyone affected by breast cancer.
Hello, I'm Em and today I'll be speaking to David. David was diagnosed with breast cancer in 2015. Since then, he's been speaking about male breast cancer and doing his bit to raise awareness. David, thank you for joining me.
No, thank you very much for having me.
To start off with, David, would you mind telling us a bit about when you were first diagnosed with breast cancer?
Well, if we go back, it was in December 2015, but I'd first picked up a lump in, it was probably about September 2015, because I'm a farm animal vet and one of my cows decided to squash me across my chest and...
Oh, goodness, okay.
Yeah. And in sort of over the weeks as that bruise disappeared, that's when I realized I had a tiny lump under my right nipple. So I, you know, which I thought was part of the injury. And then that didn't go away. So then I went to the GP probably sometime in October and then was sent to the hospital and told it probably wasn't anything, but let's play safe. And I had one biopsy and then they rang me and said, we're unhappy. And then I had a second biopsy, mm-hmm. which confirmed that it actually was breast cancer. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I imagine you weren't expecting that at all. So what was your initial reaction then? What sort of things were you feeling?
Well, I suppose because it took a while and I had a second biopsy and actually I noticed then during the time that passed that my right nipple was actually turning itself inside out. And I'd read that, you know, possibly was a sign of breast cancer. So rather unusually, by the time I got into the doctor's office to be given my diagnosis, I would have been more surprised if I'd been told it wasn't breast cancer. So in a sense, I was actually ready to be, you know, I was all set to be told this is what it is and not surprised.
So was it something that you were aware about beforehand then? Because, I mean, some people might not be aware that men can get breast cancer.
Yeah, I knew that men could get breast cancer. I suppose I never thought it would be me. Yeah, and I suppose just as the, you know, couple of months passed while I'd been monitoring it and while they were doing biopsies and with the inverting nipple, you know, just more alarm bells kept going off in my head. This was actually something serious.
Of course. So how did everyone around you react when you were having to tell people about this? What was your family's reaction?
I suppose they were stunned, really. And it wasn't that it was male breast cancer. It was just, you know, to be told that, you know, that for your family to realise that one of, you know, you've got cancer is actually quite a, you know, we never think it's going to happen to us, do we? So that was, you know, took a while to sort of for that to realize where we were really and what we were now facing.
This was, you said it was end of 2015 that you were diagnosed. So how have things changed for you in the last sort of 4.5 years?
Well, I suppose in first six months of 2016, I had my surgery and then I had chemotherapy and I had radiotherapy. And then they put me on hormone therapy and, you know, and said, you know, as far as we can all tell, you're cured. You know, there's nothing. So you try and pick your life up again, which is when in hindsight, you actually realize how difficult that was. And yeah, and then it was in July 2017, I had a follow-up scan. And that's when they could see something in my lung. And so then I had another scan in probably, I don't know, maybe October 2017, and the lesions in my lung had grown. And so then I had a big surgery in November where they went and removed bits of my lung and quite a few lymph nodes or glands in my chest. And then in January 2018, I started on a new set of 3 drugs, which I've been on ever since. And I'm still on today, and fingers crossed, I'm stable.
I mean, that's obviously a lot to to take in everything that you've just spoken about, it seems like you've gone through a lot already, but hearing that you're stable right now is obviously fantastic news. But it's something that you've been putting out there about yourself, letting people know about male breast cancer. What do you find is people's reactions when you talk to them about this? Are they as surprised as you are, I guess, that this is something that can happen?
Yeah, I suppose I find initially people are, just when you mention the word cancer, quite a lot of people become quite awkward and don't really know what to say. And I would have to admit that the same would have applied to me a few years ago. Someone starts a conversation with you and they ask you something like, I've been medically retired and can no longer work. And so people say, you know, I go to meet people and they say, you know, what do you do for a living? And, you know, part of me wants to, you know, thinks, shall I lie and just say, you know, I'm a vet and da 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 da, and that might be the easiest way for everybody. But as soon as I say, well, I've been medically retired, you can actually, you know, the vast majority of people become very awkward.
Yeah, I can completely understand why that would trigger that reaction in people. So is it something that you tend to keep to yourself? Is it not something that you often tell people maybe in social circles if you're not that close to them?
The weird thing about me is I, for whatever reason, always find it very difficult to lie about anything. And so, you know, I've discussed it with my wife quite a lot. I just feel, you know, in the end, most of the time, I just say it how it is, tell them, and some people are brilliant. Some, you know, there's a handful of people who are absolutely brilliant, and I can think of one man who I'd never met him ever before, and the first thing he did, he said, do you mind if we talk about your cancer? And I said, yeah, no problem. And then, you know, we had a half an hour conversation that was totally sort of free and easy, and he wasn't at all awkward. Yeah. And I sort of, for days after that, I remember, you know, I would reflect on that conversation and kind of how, you know, interesting it was and how, you know, how I actually enjoyed it. Yeah, in a weird way.
That's so wonderful to hear. So it's almost as if would you like there to be more of a dialogue around this? Would you like more openness towards talking about perhaps not just male breast cancer then, but all cancers in general?
Yes, I think, you know, I suppose it's trying to get the, you know, people, like anything, you don't want to talk about it too much, but it doesn't, you don't want it to, in a sense, be the elephant in the room that everyone knows about, but no one, you know, dares kind of go there and discuss it with you. Yeah.
Yeah, of course. So just kind of to normalize it in a way, I guess.
Yes. And I think part of it is my response. You know, if people say to me, how are you, David? You know, it's very easy to, you know, I've got so used to, you know, some of the side effects that they're normal for me. So in a sense, I'm fine. But actually, if I say I'm fine, that kind of stops the conversation.
Yeah.
And, you know, we've done the greeting, we can move on. And I think my wife said the other day, someone asked her, who she hadn't seen for a while, she said, how's David? And she said, oh, he's okay. You know, he's on cycle 29 or whatever it was. And she said that allowed this person to actually carry on, you know, continue the conversation and ask a bit more about me, rather than she could have just said, oh, he's fine, and shut the conversation down. So I think we're learning to how to respond and kind of leave the door open for people to talk a bit more if they want to.
Was there a difference then in your experience of how you reacted to primary then and how you reacted to secondary? What were your experience with both? How did both of those make you feel?
I suppose primary, there was always the hope that you would be cured. And when you finish the initial treatment, I think the statistics say that there's a 70% chance that you actually are cured. But of course, you don't know if you're in the 70% or the 30% who are going to have a recurrence. And so you hang on to the hope that you're in the 70% in the good bracket. But whereas secondary, once, it took a while for it for the penny to drop, in a sense, and to process and realize the enormity of a secondary diagnosis. You know, that actually, you know, you can't be cured. I think a lot of people don't understand the fact that you will be on treatment forever. You know, and that's why sometimes odd people say to me something and I say, well, I'm on my 35th cycle of chemo in total. And they, you know, it really makes them, you know, I think it makes them realize that, you know, this is ongoing and there is no, you know, there's no finish line as such. You're playing for time, really. That's what you're on treatment. And the idea of the treatment is to hopefully not be too awful so that you can tolerate it. And it's going to, you know, give you extra months or extra years. And I suppose I'm fortunate that, you know, at the moment there's quite, you know, I'm on one of the newer drugs that have come out, and that seem, you know, for me, touch wood to date, that's doing an amazing job. And, you know, you just keep hoping it's going to, but you always know in the back of your mind that, you know, your cancer is going to mutate one day, because that's what cancers do. And so one day, one scan, one blood test is going to be the day when your doctor says, you know, I'm sorry, but, you know, we've got to do something else now.
Mm-hmm. Of course. I mean, thank you. I know that was a very difficult question. I really appreciate your answer.
I'm very open, and I don't know. I suppose I'm lucky, you know, my upbringing. I've always been very resilient and kind of practical. So I just say it how it is, really. And in a sense, I suppose I've got comfortable with, if you're put in an uncomfortable place for long enough, you know, the chances are you become reasonably comfortable with it, because it's the only way to cope.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I suppose that makes a lot of sense. And also probably the best attitude that you could have. Thank you again. I know that you have kind of gone out there a little bit more on occasion and kind of put yourself out there. I think you participated in the show with us previously, is that right?
Yes, I did. Yeah, that was in October last year. Yeah, I was lucky to be invited to be in the Breast Cancer Now fashion show in London. Yeah, and it was something I would never in a million years have done pre-cancer.
Mm.
But, you know, if someone had said, come on, you've got to do your good bit for a charity or whatever, I would have, you know, said, forget it, no chance. And yet, and I can't really explain it, and yet I, you know, kind of my own free will, you know, put my name forward. And yeah, as scary and as, you know, I remember quite a lot of us said how when we are about to go on the catwalk that we were absolutely petrified. And yet you somehow did it. And afterwards you felt absolutely amazing. You know, you had such a buzz.
Excellent to hear. And I think it kind of ties into that normalizing things and finding ways that you can, you know, just accept that this is part of you and almost have it on show and celebrate it in a way that you are still you and still doing things and putting yourself out of your comfort zone.
Yeah.
Is there any advice that you would like to give to men, but also just anyone in general that has breast cancer or may develop it one day?
Yeah. I suppose for men, it's the main thing is that they're just, if you're aware that it's possible, yes, it's very rare, but it is actually possible, then I think you're halfway there to if something, you know, if you do notice a change in your chest, a lump or a discharge or whatever it might be, you know, a little alarm bell will go off in your head and you'll get it checked. Whereas if you don't think it's at all possible, then you probably do nothing about it for far too long.
So just keeping that vigilance then and keeping that awareness of what to look out for.
Yeah. And because they're so, you know, it affects whatever, you know, it is very rare, but it's, I think it's like anything. If you know it's possible, then it's always going to be in the somewhere buried in the back of your mind. It'll be there. And, you know, if you were in my situation, the alarm bell would trigger a little bit faster. I appreciate that male breast cancer is pretty rare. So there's a limit to, you know, there's plenty of other cancers that men can get that are far more common. But I think the secondary breast cancer thing is, you know, which I know Breast Cancer Now having a big push on, but I suppose with time I've become to realise, you know, what it's really like to have a secondary cancer and kind of know you're incurable. And to try and make sure that, you know, the support services, whether that's in the NHS or through charities or whatever, are, you know, kind of up and running and available to, you know, all the, you know, in terms of breast cancer, to the, you know, the huge number of women who who, you know, end up, you know, who are like me, and just, you know, you battle on and you have your treatment and, you know, and keep your fingers crossed kind of thing. Yeah.
Is there one piece of advice that you've received that has helped you cope with your diagnosis? Or is it a case of maybe just having support from people? Is there something that people have done for you that have helped you in your situation?
I suppose on the support front, it's I think people's friends and family don't, you know, they really want to help, but they don't quite know what to do to help. And so people will say to you, you know, if you need any help, you know, let me know. And actually far better than that is they would be that, you know, friends and family don't just offer and wait for you. They actually, you know, intervene and say, you know, for example, will say something like, well, why don't I pick the children up from school tomorrow? Or, you know, I'll make you some supper or whatever it was. And just things like that, just kind of invite themselves in and be helpful rather than wait. Because it's, I don't know what, you know, even though we know people have offered help, for whatever reason, we don't go and request it. So I think it's better that they just, you know, front foot forward and come in and help and be useful. Yeah. I suppose one good piece of advice for someone who is diagnosed, whether it's with breast cancer or any other cancer, is to actually make contact with one of the charities to get some guidance and help and support. And so, you know, in my case, I wasn't aware of Breast Cancer Now until after my secondary cancer diagnosis. And since then, it's been great. I can just ring up and have a chat with someone about whatever it might be for 20 minutes or so. And it's trying to be aware that there is actually support out there from someone like Breast Cancer Now or whoever else to, you know, to give you some advice and guidance and help, because you're going to need it. Mm-hmm. I've only phoned two or three times, but each time, and I haven't had actually, you know, sometimes you think you're going to phone up and get a solution to your problem, but actually just chatting to someone. And in one case, they just made me think about an issue that I was fed up about, and they made me think about it in a different light. And then you realize, you know, that it's not quite what you made it out to be.
I mean, I'm so happy to hear that you've been able to access that support from us. That's really lovely, just personally for me to hear that, but I'm sure other people listening would take comfort in that as well.
Yeah.
Is there something that you wish you had known more about before you were diagnosed? Obviously, it's a difficult question to answer because there's probably a lot that people could be more aware of in general. But is there one thing that you perhaps had a kind of ignorance towards that you think only someone who has actually gone through cancer treatment could know?
I think probably prior to my diagnosis, I was, you're aware of cancer and everything else, but I think you're very ignorant of how it affects people's lives and how it, even for a lot, you know, a lot of people, you know, they have their primary treatment and they are cured or they're hopefully cured. And so I think society thinks that, well, you know, you've had your treatment, you've got better, you know, everything's fine again. But there's always in the back of your head is a little niggle that, you know, did treatment actually work? Has it actually gone completely? Or, you know, is it going to come back one day? And it's quite strange when you finish primary treatment, it's quite, you know, you're so used to being in hospital and going to hospital and suddenly they say, oh, you're all done, David, well done. You know, it's all over, you know, off you go. And you're kind of suddenly a bit lost in life for a few months because I think one of my friends said it's like having you've been cast adrift at sea without your life jacket suddenly. Yeah.
Thank you for your honesty there. Is there like a self-care tip that you would give to anyone? Is there anything that you personally do for yourself? I know we've spoken about what other people have done for you, but is there something that you do for yourself, perhaps when, if you are in active treatment, just to kind of pick up your spirits?
Yeah, I suppose what we always did through the initial chemo and now through all the subsequent chemos I go through, my wife and I, she usually comes to every one of them, and we always have a plan to afterwards to go off and have lunch or have supper or whatever it might be. So there's something good that happens in that day rather than, you know, going to the hospital and getting your treatment. So we actually come home and you've had a bit of an outing as well. That would be, that's the main thing that we try to do, is try to put other things into that day which are fun to do. Like, I have all my treatment now in London, and there's one particular restaurant in London that my wife loves going to. And so, you know, we almost always have lunch there after finishing morning treatment. Yeah.
Well, that sounds like a lovely way to kind of then turn it around.
Yes. Yeah. That restaurant are, you know, they know my wife so well now that we get such a welcome there, you know, and so she gets lots of TLC and I suppose I do, but, you know, I think it's really important that she does, and they make a big fuss, and you know, it's just a really positive thing to do on a difficult day.
So thank you very much for speaking with me today, David.
No, and thank you very much for having me, and yeah, hopefully it'll be useful to other people, which is the main reason I'm so willing to participate, I suppose. Yeah.
Brilliant. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the Breast Cancer Now podcast. Make sure to subscribe to our channel on your preferred podcast service to hear our next episode. If you have any questions or concerns from listening today, you can find information on our research, services and campaigning on our website at breastcancernow.org.